Welcome to the Pintcast. Joining me this week are Joseph and Elliot. You can follow these fine fellows on Twitter at I Hate Your Club and at Yankee Gunner. Welcome, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to have you. We're going to start with the North London Derby. There's so much to talk about Arsenal this week. A big rivalry match at the weekend. And I have to say, quite a disappointing result, as well as quite a few injuries along the way. We'll go straight to you, Elliot. Give me your thoughts on that match as a whole.
I thought it was basically terrible. You can always find a positive spin for something, but I thought they were poor. They were there for the taking. You know, as bad as the start to the season has been for us, theirs has been worse. They just lost at home to West Brom. And I thought we got everything wrong. The team selection was wrong. The formation didn't make sense. The tactics didn't work. You know, when people say, oh, well, they didn't create anything, we were on top. You know, I watched that first half over again after the game, and if they could have put together even one decent final ball, they had so many counterattacking opportunities. And I saw a picture circulating on Twitter. It was pretty interesting. It showed Aaron Ramsey losing the ball, being dispossessed about 20 yards out from their goal. And the person had circled Chambers, Gibbs, Wilshire, and Arteta. And all of them were at least even with Ramsey or further up the pitch, meaning the moment he was dispossessed, the only players behind the ball were Mertesacker and Koscielny, and Chesney. And I just think everything about this system, you know, we don't have the defensive midfielder to play the 4-1-4-1, not starting Alexis. I mean, I'll stop talking for a minute and let Joseph jump in real quick, but I would love to spend a little time talking about how poor the decision was not to start Alexis and why I feel that way. But generally, I just thought it was a poor performance, and I think we got really on top of them towards the end when they just looked like they were holding on for a point. You know, but it's fair to point out also that through the enforced injury substitutions and chasing the game to some extent, we were forced to put personnel on the pitch that were not only our best players, but also in their natural positions. And that's when we looked most dangerous. All in all, I think Spurs are terrible. I think we should have beaten them comfortably. I thought it was a pretty poor performance. And I don't know that there's a whole lot you can take from it other than the fact that I'm glad we didn't lose it.
Yeah, we're still undefeated, Elliot. You know, where's the defeated spirit coming from?
Invincible season
Invincibles,
ahead.
Invincibles, right. Well, you know,
is it possible to finish fourth without losing a match?
The Invincibles drew, what, 12 or 13 matches, right? Something like that. It was quite a few. All right, we'll go over to you, Joseph. Give me your thoughts on that match.
Wow. It's hard to add on too much from what Elliot said because he pretty much summed it up. I mean, I felt the same way as far as the counterattacks. We were just wide open, constantly wide open for a counterattack, and the fact that they're quite poor is the only thing that saved us. And even with that, we still should have beat them. I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody was happy with the lineup, really. I mean, I guess I didn't necessarily understand. I understood starting Chamberlain. I thought that was fine, but
maybe playing dual flanks with him and Alexis.
Maybe drop Jack. Maybe drop Aaron.
Yeah.
I mean, again, why are we? I mean, if you
don't worry, we won't have that problem for a while.
Right. Well, I felt
problem solved.
Yeah. I felt maybe he was actually rotating a little bit because he started Jack midweek and rested Ramsey. So maybe he was going to only play one of them.
That would have
especially going into, you know, where we have another week of a midweek match and another big game next weekend. So it didn't really bother me that, you know, he rotated a little bit, but then it didn't really because he just started his favorite players, you know, all together again, you know. So I don't know. I mean, it would have been nice to have, I don't know, Chamberlain on the right and put Sanchez on the left. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be crazy, but I mean, I've seen stranger things.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, you're going to tell me that Oxlade-Chamberlain deserves to be starting ahead of Alexis Sanchez? I love Oxlade-Chamberlain. I thought he played relatively well. But even if you don't want to make the obvious point that one of Aaron or Jack should have been rotated out of the squad to make room for Alexis, how do you make the argument that Oxlade-Chamberlain deserves a place in the squad ahead of Alexis Sanchez
in a big game? I think there could be an argument that you could start him on the opposite flanks. It's not like Santi's been at his most convincing. So I think you could include them both on the side. That would have been, if I were to have been making the lineup and if I were to include him, that would have been...
Yeah, if you wanted to include Ox, you put Sanchez on the other side. I mean,
But let me just say this, because this is the part thing I've been wanting to get off my chest since that game. You know, this is a manager who built a team and a formation around Cesc Fabregas. He created a formation and a system to take advantage of the prodigal talents of his best player. When you spend, you know, £42 million on Mesut Ozil and £35 million on Alexis Sanchez, you build your team to support their skills and what they do. Now, I've read a lot of people, Tim Stillman wrote very articulately about Sanchez not distributing the ball quickly enough and sometimes being dispossessed.
That's an interesting point. And
I think those are fair points. But here's my point. Alexis Sanchez was not a mystery when we bought him. We spent top dollar to buy a well-known player. We knew his strengths. We knew his weaknesses. We knew his style. To me, when you buy an Alexis Sanchez, and you buy Mesut Ozil, you construct the team to suit what they do and what they bring to your squad. That means you start Ozil centrally. You start Alexis in every big game because your best players win you big games. This is a guy who's played in Clásicos. This is a guy who's played at the highest level of football internationally.
Yeah, I mean, he scored the goal that would have won Barcelona the league last season if they hadn't conceded to Atletico.
Yeah, and what a goal it was. And he's our leading scorer, oh, by the way. But here's the point, right? Either you don't buy him because you don't think he fits the way we want to play, or you buy him and you make our play fit what he does. You don't leave him on the bench for our first big match.
The only justification I can make for it, which I can't, it's the only question mark so that we have to wait, is, you know, he didn't start at the weekend before. He played midweek. We don't know about his fitness, whether or not there could be a possible, you know, he could be potentially in the red in terms of some.
But then don't play him against Southampton.
Well, it could be something that he picked up at Southampton. Yeah. I'm just playing devil's advocate. That's the only justification to me. That's the only way you could justify not starting him.
If you're telling me that we're going to spend £35 million on yet another attacking wide forward with all the wide forwards we have, and you're not going to reinforce defensive midfield or the defense, then you have to play that player every single game. If you're spending that amount of money on a player and he's not one of your first attacking names on the team sheet, you've made a huge mistake.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. You know, people criticize Wenger for not, you know, they say he doesn't do tactics. I mean, obviously he is. But, you know, whether or not we agree with them, whether or not they come off is a whole other story, because it seemed like he got it right at Villa. And we saw a team clicking, a little more cohesive. It seemed a lot closer to what many of us would think what our first choice 11 would be currently. And with that said, then he goes and tinkers again, and then we get a different result. I'm going to go on a little something about Tottenham. So here's the thing for me. Like, this was actually the most disappointing result all season. By far. And that's, yep. You know, because, you know, a loss in the Capital One Cup, yes, it sucks to be eliminated, you know, but there are worse things that have happened. Losing to Dortmund away in the Champions League, it's a group stage match. This doesn't going towards our points total to the end of the season. This is dropping points at home to a mid-table side, because this Tottenham team is quite possibly the worst we've seen in quite a few years. You know,
five, six
seasons. Yeah. I mean, this is about when. And the thing is that realistically, I don't think if they're lucky, they finish sixth or seventh this season. I mean, they're a genuine mid-table team this season. And
their fans agree with you. They don't think they're going to get killed.
And they looked like shit. They did nothing when they got the ball. They really were abysmal. You saw them take chances, and it's just like, you know, was it Chadley? I think it was before they scored. Chadley like shooting it wide across the goal. It was such a pathetic attempt, you know, of like screwing a shot wide as it dribbled past Chesney as he like followed it across. You know, they just offered nothing. Adebayor was useless, and it was just like, you see this, and they're just there for the taking. This is exact for us this season. This is like drawing at home against West Brom. That's what this is. And you know, dropping points like this, you can only do this so many times in a season before you drop out of contention for major honors. And that's the thing. Like, we've already had a couple results. You know, I mean, obviously we've seen Leicester away, it can be a little more tricky. You know, so a 1-1 draw might not be the worst result there, but really, if you're trying to contend for a title, and I'm not saying we're really going to contend for the whole season or that we're going to win it, but like last season, you want to put together a title challenge. You can't be giving away these easy points this early in the season and this many times.
But it's not just the result either, right? I mean, look, drawing at home to Spurs isn't a result that has you throwing your hands up and saying, I give up. It's everything. It's a formation that doesn't seem to be working and doesn't suit our strengths. It's a team selection that's beyond baffling, an attempt to shoehorn in seemingly favored players in favor of players that probably should be playing. It's losing a goal to a mistake by a player in an area where we knew we were deficient to begin with, and Matthew Flamini making an error.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like everything's exacerbated.
And I'll tell you something too. I mean, the thing that bothers me still about this team is there is such an easy blueprint for taking points off Arsenal, and everybody seems to run that blueprint now. And it's basically try to keep it tight at the back, try to press the midfielders, especially Arteta or Flamini, and get the ball off them. And the minute you get it, play long, because there's no one in the spaces where the fullbacks play, and there's no one who can range back in midfield to protect the center backs. And I'm not even very tactically astute, and I can tell you this. I have conversations with a guy on Twitter who is incredibly intelligent when it comes to tactics. I believe his real human name is Naveen. I could be wrong about that, but I believe that's correct.
He does the articles for 7 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. And you know, he really knows what he's talking about when it comes to tactics. And the point he makes is you can have your fullbacks pressed, you know, as high up as we do. You can play the way we do if you have really athletic, well-drilled midfielders who can press and press hard and take the ball off the opposition the minute they get it. If you have a defensive midfielder like a Sergio Busquets, but we don't have those qualities, and it's not working. And the thing that worried me about the Tottenham game is just they were terrible, but we seem to be a very, very easy team to have a strategy to beat or at least take points off right now.
I mean, I wouldn't say that Tottenham had a really good strategy. We gave them this match.
It is the strategy. It's just the basic strategy. You counterattack on Arsenal and you win. I mean, what Dortmund did to us was so embarrassing. And I think that for me was the real eye-opener. Honestly, not the North London derby, because that game, that's not a great Dortmund side. And they were struggling with injuries. They're mid-table in their league right now. And they dismantled us simply by running harder, pressing harder, and counterattacking.
Well, they're a significantly better team. I mean, let's just say, I'm not saying it's going to be better than Arsenal, but I'm saying they're a significantly better team when they're clicking. They're having the same kind of problems as Arsenal are having this season with having the consistency. You know, they lost to Mainz right after that result.
But it was no contest. We weren't even in the match.
No, but you know, let's give them a little credit. European night, they've performed well on the European stage. They're 2 years removed from being a Champions League finalist. They're a very good side, and they were probably the best side we faced until we faced City, you know, this season. I mean, it's one of the, or you know, up until it's one of the other teams. So I'm not going to read into that too much. They came in and played, you know, Klopp said after that, that's the best they, and from what I've seen, that's the best they played all season. And they really put it together at home on a night like that. And yes, we were not very good, but it kind of was the perfect
I told
storm.
You, they wouldn't play that well again all year. They won't play that well again.
They may. They may. They'll probably do it a couple times.
I like to make proclamations. I don't think they're going to look as good, as bad as we were and as good as they were. I don't think they'll look that good. They might play well. I'm not saying they're going to
I think if it happens for them, it would probably be in another Champions League match, because it seems like they also
We have another one coming up.
Well, hopefully not in the match against us. But, you know, should they make it to the knockout rounds? I mean, they do seem to get up for the big games and have some big game players. So we'll see how it goes with that. But, I'm with you, Ellie. I mean, what we saw from the team in the North London Derby was, even though I didn't think we played horribly, I didn't think it was a tragedy all over the field. I thought a few people put in some pretty good shifts, but it's just we've been missing. There's been a lack of dynamism, and it really does seem like a lack of ideas once we get up there, and that's the biggest issue for me. Well, obviously, giving away cheap ass goals, which is something that we're making into much too, you know, of an often occurrence again. But it doesn't look like we're not creating many real goal scoring chances. And I thought Welbeck was okay, but he was kind of anonymous. You know, he was kind of up there. I didn't see him do anything really poorly, but he didn't really have a really big influence in the match. I don't know. It leaves us in a tough situation. And let's get to the next issue, is that now we're being decimated by injury. You know, we have it's a really tough nut to crack, because you know you have the two midfielders that go off with injury were rested midweek. They weren't even in the squad, you know. And I was listening to the Arscast Extra this morning. They're talking about it. I mean, look, it is probably a little too early to blame Shad Forsyth, but like, who the fuck knows why we're getting these injuries? You know, like, these guys were rested. They had a full week, you know, proper preparation you would expect, and yet, you know, a bad hamstring injury for Ramsey could see him out 6 weeks. So let's pray he's back in 2 months, right? I mean, really, like, we have to pray he's back by December, really, that he's playing in first team matches. And then Arteta picking up another calf injury.
I mean, so when the guy you need to cover the most area on the pitch is north of, what, 32, 33, and, you know, is being asked to play every game, you know, I don't think you can be surprised.
Well, I think Rambo's position is one that covers the most.
But. Well, Ramsey just does because of the way he plays, but in the system that we're using, in theory, it should probably be
the holding midfielder. Box to box.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question is, the one thing none of us can answer why we pick up as many injuries as we do. The one thing we can all agree on, it's not bad luck. It isn't. Because statistics, you know, injuries should occur to all of the top teams at a relatively similar rate. All right. You know, I mean, especially when it comes to muscle injuries. So it's not bad luck. I'm bored when it comes to pointing fingers at who's to blame for the injuries, because frankly, like, none of us really know and none of us can fix it. But I definitely think that what we have done right now is we have adopted a technique, a style of playing, a formation and a strategy that actually emphasizes our weaknesses rather than masking them. You know, anytime you can have Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez, Santi Cazorla, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Jack Wilshere, Aaron Ramsey, and find a way to make your attack look blunt and lacking dynamism, that's really remarkable. You know, and that's the thing that frustrates me. You know, at the end of the day, we can't reopen the transfer window. We can't go out and buy another defender. We can't upgrade from Arteta or Flamini. But, you know, you look at Liverpool last season. Liverpool last season had no real holding midfielder and a car crash defense, but they played some scintillating football. And I would argue that we have the playmakers now and the pace and the creativity to be able to do that part.
Well,
we don't seem to be able to.
It seems to me like, well, then, I mean, obviously you're pointing the blame at Arsene, which is somewhat rightfully so. But I mean, how much do we actually blame the players for this? I mean, they're out there on the pitch amongst each other, you know, with all these other technical geniuses and pacey players. Like, why the fuck aren't they getting it right? Because I mean, I think the blame goes on both shoulders, right?
Tell you why I don't agree with that? Just real quick, look at the Villa game when it clicked. At times, we had reverted back to a formation and putting players in positions where they're comfortable. There are times this season, and I'm sure short preseason has a lot to do with it, and I'm sure post World Cup has a lot to do with it, but if it's a short preseason post-World Cup, then the last thing you do is tinker and try to reinvent the wheel. This season, at times, players look like strangers. The passing percentages are lower. They don't look like they know where they're going to be. They're not on the same wavelength. But at the second half of the Spurs game and in the Villa game at times, when we reverted back to a formation that was more familiar, when players were deployed in their more natural positions, things seem to click more. I don't think that's rocket science. And again, I'm not trying to suggest I know how to manage a football team better than Arsene. I'm saying Arsene seems to have some vision about what he's trying to do with this team. And maybe he just should have picked a season when he had a longer preseason to work on it. Or maybe it's not working. But we know he's nothing if not stubborn. And I worry how many points it'll cost us before this clicks, if it ever does.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation because, you know, with these type of scenarios, hindsight's 20/20. So, you know, if he tinkers the formation, if it works, if he sees something he likes in it one day and it doesn't work the next, you know, like, we're always going to go back and look at it in that same way. So, I mean, I'm with you. I see that. I don't really understand the formation change. I haven't seen I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's as pronounced as some people have said. I think a lot of it has to do with performance from the players. I mean, obviously, you know, the starting positions for all these players have shifted slightly. But let's talk about going forward, because now it seems like a lot of that selection issue has now been cleared up for us. And you should be happy. You're going to get your boy in his run, in his position. So Jackie Wilshere now gets, as long as he can stay fit. Now I have this terrible fucking, terrible feeling that he'll immediately get injured now as well.
And we'll be stuck with no injured.
Fun. He's already injured.
I know he has his ankle knocked, but you know what I mean? Like this is basically what he's been eating, because in terms of form and whatnot, he has probably been the guy who's deserved to be out. I mean, I know we've had our discussions about Ramsey's form, but he was still contributing to a certain extent. But now he gets his run of games. He's going to get to play through the middle of the park for as many matches as he's fit for. This is a chance. I mean, look, this is what he needed coming into this season, and he needs to stay fit and play through it. And we're now at a point where it's kind of interesting on the depth chart. Well, like, who's going to play box-to-box midfielder if Wilshere's not in? So it looks like we might be seeing Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain through the middle again, which, you know, could be something really exciting. I actually really like the idea of that. But then who are other box-to-box midfielders? Diaby? I mean,
I remember a game from last season when Ox played through the center of midfield. I believe we were at Stamford Bridge that day.
And there's also when he did it against Bayern and looked quite good. So,
yeah, well, that's fair.
So, I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of
it was
of
a dead rubber, but yeah.
True. But I mean, we've seen a bit. We've seen promise from Ox. We've also seen that he doesn't look entirely ready. But it does.
Look, I love Oxlade-Chamberlain. I just don't like him in center midfield right now.
Well, so you better get used to it, because I will go out on a limb and say he will start in center midfield midweek.
And so Ozil will go back to being on the left again.
No, because Jack's not going to play midweek, right? He's not. They said he's probably going to be fit for Chelsea. So you probably have Ozil at the 10 and, you know, Chamberlain at the 8 and then Flamini at the, you know, holding mid. It's going to be interesting to see.
Can we play Flamini holding his pink slip?
Hey, look, I would make an argument that I'd rather see fucking Coquelin play defensive mid than Flamini, but, you know, you've told me your opinions on Coquelin and where you think he should be, but that's just my opinion. I'm with you on the Flamini train, that he doesn't seem like, look, there's a reason why he never locked down a starting spot before. Like, he's a squad player. He's a good player that can come in and can play a bunch of roles, but he's never been starting caliber for Arsenal, you know?
Yeah.
He could be a good holding midfielder for a team like West Ham, who now have Alex Salt.
I mean, I'd be tempted to say put Chambers there and play Bellerin at fullback, because it's such an important place, but it is a huge risk. I mean, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
Chambers is going to be playing center back, right? Because Koscielny's hurt, right?
Yeah.
That was the rumor today, is that Koscielny's hurt and they're just not letting us know.
Great.
Well, he's got that. He's struggling with that Achilles problem, right? And he's had it for a while.
Right.
Joy.
Mm-hmm. There was someone on Twitter, and I can't remember who, someone who was at the game, who said at the end of the game he noticeably winced and was limping. Not the person on Twitter, Koscielny. you know, and this is the thing, right? When you look at constructing a squad, I think the thing that has really got me so frustrated is, how are we in a situation where we're contorting ourselves to fit in all the number 10s we have in the squad, but can't cobble together a defensive midfielder? You could argue the last time Arsenal was really a great team, we had Patrick Vieira and Gilberto Silva in midfield. And you look at how City has tried to construct their team with players like, you know, Fernandinho, Yaya. You look at what Jose Mourinho did. The first thing he did when he got there is he bought Matic. He's got, you know, physicality and pace through midfield. And, you know, you look at those two, and then you look at our team, and for several years now, we've been transitioning to these small, technical, you know, ball possession midfielders, but there's no pace in midfield. There's no physicality in midfield. And I just, you know, wonder, is the balance irretrievable at this point?
I'd argue against the pace thing. I mean, outside of
there's
our
no pace in midfield.
No pace in midfield.
Who's our pace in midfield?
Ozil's quick. Ramsey's not slow. Wilshere's not slow.
None of them are going to run by you. What
center midfielders on those teams have that kind of pace? I mean, I guess Yaya Toure can drive forward, but outside of that, I mean, which one of those guys are fast that you named?
Well, I mean, you know,
Matic is not speedy. Fabregas isn't fast.
No, but they have the physicality, right? So, I mean, they make up for it with the physicality. I mean, Ramirez can run by you, you know.
He doesn't have pace.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, you look at those teams and what they've gone for is they've gone for physical, athletic midfielders behind a creative playmaker. And, you know, by the way, I'm not trying to malign the quality of the players we have. We have tremendous quality. You know, there's just also tremendous imbalance. It's a joke to me that, like, we're going to have match day squads where, like, Podolski and Joel Campbell and stuff aren't even on the bench, let alone, you know, in the starting lineup. And yet we're talking about playing Coughlin at defensive midfielder and you know, possibly playing Nacho Monreal at center back. It just,
I mean, the scary thing right now is that it's still September, and you look at where we are depth wise in terms of let's just look defense and defensive midfield, right?
Yeah.
Arteta's out. We have Monreal out for, you know, another few weeks at least. You have Debuchy out long term. You have Koscielny struggling with the problem, so he probably can't play twice a week right now in the middle of the park. You know, we can't run him to death. You know, you do that with an Achilles injury, he could fucking rupture his Achilles, and then he's out till next season. So you're really treading on thin fucking ice, and it's still September.
Fucked. We're
yeah,
fucked.
We're completely fucked. I mean, we're looking at, you know, Coquelin is the cover on the bench to play fullback, a guy that we were trying to offload, and he's now also – so he's right now currently fullback cover. You got a 19-year-old in Bellerin who's our option on, you know, we have two 19-year-olds as our options at right back, and, you know, and a reject midfielder who is our other fullback option behind Kieran Gibbs and behind Bellerin and Chambers, who's also your other option at defensive midfielder. It is a fucking joke. I mean, that is to be this bare bones this quickly is a bit ridiculous.
The thing is, look, Arsene Wenger has blind spots, and I'm sure he's not the only manager who does, but the reality is when he sold Alex Song, he said he'd replace him, and then what he told us is Diaby deserved a chance. When he sold Thomas Vermaelen, he said he would be replaced, and he wasn't. I mean, you know, you can build the squad full of as much talent as you want, but if you're playing, you know, Sunday league players in defense or in defensive midfield, you haven't built a squad. And I think we're at the point now where it's comical how we're built. We have overwhelmingly too much talent in attack. We can't keep them all happy or use them all. And people say, well, you need depth. You do, of course. I've been one of the people saying you need depth. But at the same time, you have to have players to fill those critical positions further back. And I just can't understand how we paid £35 million for a wide forward who didn't start in the North London Derby, but didn't buy a defensive midfielder and didn't replace Thomas Vermaelen. And, you know, I've had people tell me, oh, well, you know, it's injuries. Injuries are the problem. Well, you know, you look at it, and even absent the injuries, we had three senior center backs to start the season, and our third choice center back is a 19-year-old right back who had never played center back in the Premier League, so, you know, or at the professional level. So I don't understand the mindset of putting the team together this way. And I realize I'm kind of ranting and sounding a little hysterical, but it's troubling because the resources are there. The resources were spent. And at this point, if you said to me, would you give Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil back? I would. I would give them back if it meant that we got quality holding midfielder with strength and physicality and cover and defense, because I do think that Jack Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey and Santi Cazorla can do what Ozil does. And I do think that you know, those players in Oxlade-Chamberlain and Welbeck and Giroud and all those guys can do what Sanchez does to a lesser extent. But no one can fill the role of defensive midfielder in the entire squad.
I mean, I agree with you, man. It's a huge deficiency. And I mean, to go with your point, I feel like we did, like, I won't argue with the acquisitions we made on the front line, the midfield and forward line, because I think that's the kind of depth we need to contend with these other teams, because that's the kind of depth they all have. But you have to have that all the way through the squad, which meant at the minimum two more bodies to have come in at defensive midfield and defender. I mean, you know, technically Diaby's another midfielder on the books, but fuck, man, we can't count him. We cannot count him. You need a real player in his spot.
I would take Kallstrom. Where the hell's Kallstrom?
That's a
great point. You know what? Honestly, Joseph, like, that's the best point. Like, we bought a midfielder with a broken back last January. For what reason? Because we thought we might get so desperate that he could salvage something for us at that season. And yet we still in the summer didn't feel the need to address that position. When you're buying midfielders with a broken back in January, that should be a sign that that's an area you need to reinforce in the summer. And you could say, well, he tried and he didn't find the player and he couldn't get it done. You know, at some point...
Well, it means you're not good enough at your job.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, if you can't get the guy you want, get someone. I mean, do I think for a second that Danny Welbeck was the target at striker? No. Am I happy we got him? You bet I am. And Giroud's injury proves how important that acquisition was. We should have gotten someone.
Yeah, I would have been happy with a guy like Schneiderlin, even though he wasn't the first choice guy. You know what I mean?
Kill
like,
for Schneiderlin.
So before the international break, we have the little matter of a Champions League game midweek at home against Galatasaray on Wednesday, as well as visiting Chelsea at the Bridge at the weekend. So we'll start off with the Champions League match. Very important to get back to winning ways in this match after dropping the opening match to Dortmund. Joseph, give me your thoughts heading into this Champions League. Do you think that we'll be able to get it back together to get the right result?
Well,
those sighs are just so long and belabored.
For some reason, I think we'll be okay. I don't think it'll be pretty, but I think we'll get the 3 points.
I think I'm with you there.
Yeah, but I'm kind of... Go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, I'm not expecting... to be wowed by a performance, that's for sure.
Well, it's going to be a bit of a makeshift lineup, so it'll be interesting to see. Go on, Elliot.
I'm going to sound like someone else has inhabited my body, but I'm expecting a good performance and a solid result, and I'll just tell you why. Look, I'm not one of these people that's going to say something so stupid as to suggest that injuries are a good thing. They're not a good thing. But I do think they may force the manager to just play players where they're best suited and maybe revert to a formation that's more like our old 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. And so I think Ozil will play through the middle. I think Sanchez will come back in and start. I think Cazorla will start, out wide. If Jack can't go, Oxlade-Chamberlain may start in midfield with Flamini. And I think in general, the team will probably have it a shape and a style that looks a little more familiar and probably makes the players feel a little more comfortable. Turkish teams have an absolute horrible record on English soil. And these are the matches that Arsene specializes in. This team has lacked identity this season for most of the season. And if you look at it, the two games against Besiktas, the game against Leicester, the game against Spurs, the game against Everton, for most of these games, we've been really, really, really poor. And if you ask me to point out the times when I think we've looked better, I think it was when we looked more like ourselves, for lack of a better way of putting it. I don't know that, it'll be easy, but I think given the personnel available, we may just look a little more like ourselves. Now, there is always the worry that Wenger will rotate with an eye towards being fresh against Chelsea, but what I would argue is a good performance and a good result against Galatasaray could be as beneficial as rest.
Yeah, the perfect catalyst. You got to go on the right note, right?
Yeah, I expect to see a really nice performance. Ultimately, I hate to be all doom and gloom because, people have sort of branded me that way, but the funny thing is I'm always optimistic going into the season. I always want the best for this team. I enjoy seeing us win and play beautifully winning. And, I was brought up as an Arsenal fan on Arsene Wenger's beautiful football. And I think the thing that just holds me back is this worry that whatever it is he's been trying with this team this year has really taken the sting out of our attack, and we don't have the personnel to compensate for it at the other end. So, my hope this week is that we'll be forced almost to play players in positions where they're more comfortable, and that'll elicit a response and maybe be the catalyst for Wenger to say, I'm just going to stick with this going forward, and maybe that turns the season around to some extent.
I think Joseph.
Well, to go to your point about forcing his hand, I mean, we can go back to last year and he admitted that he had a very small squad, and we didn't have a small squad, but we had a small squad of players that he was going played. To use, right? Because I mean, we begged all season to see him give someone else a chance, and he never did until that person got hurt. And he didn't really kind of have to last year, and even the year before, we had a lot of dead weight and players he didn't trust and didn't want to use, and you can keep going back for I don't know how many years of that, but he is not good at rotation. He hasn't shown he's been good at rotation until something forces his hand. He rode Ramsey until he fucking died last year because he wouldn't rotate because he didn't trust other players, or he liked the combination so much. He just keeps going forward without a thought to what it's doing to a person's body.
There were other injuries, and it's really hard to not keep riding a hot hand. I mean, you know, it's a big decision. Look, yeah, he rode him into the ground. He probably could have rotated him a bit, but, you know,
he's been riding players into the ground forever. I mean, we went through RVP's last season riding him like crazy, even though we all agreed that, right, but we all agreed there were points when you're five up on Blackburn with 20 minutes to go where you could arrest a guy. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's not very good at it. I mean, I'm just based on what I've seen for the last 5 years.
Joseph, you have some good news. Why don't you ask Elliot about his favorite French striker? Didn't you hear about something?
Don't do this to me.
Hey, Elliot, did you see someone got a contract till 2018?
Yeah. Well, at least that'll keep me in the podcasting business for a while.
Hey, topics will present themselves for another 4 years.
I have always said this. I'm comfortable with Giroud being in the squad. I'm not comfortable with him being our first choice center forward. The thing I do think is that, and I've banged on about this, and I know I have these themes that get tedious and people get aggravated with it, but one of my thoughts is that Arsenal's a very comfortable place to be a player, and players have even said that. You know, you don't get shouted at. There aren't consequences for poor performances. You don't get dropped. You know, there isn't really a culture of competitiveness in some regards. And I just, you know, I look at the Giroud contract extension. It's sort of another example of what did we reward him for? You know, could we have gone another year without giving him a contract extension? Were people going to, you know, was Barcelona going to come steal him away from us? No. If we wanted to keep Giroud, we could have. Let him put in 3 or 4 great months when he comes back from injury and earn a contract extension. I just, you know, I think he's
led the line pretty well. I mean, look, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve
He hasn't any. Been miserable, but did we need to rush into giving him a contract right now? I mean, what if we decide we want to go out and get a really superstar striker and relegate Danny Welbeck to being the backup to that guy? Do we want Giroud around? I guess I don't fully understand why there was a need or an urgency to do that. I think, you know, Arsene Wenger used to have a ruthless streak about him, a really ruthless streak. Look at how he dismantled the Invincibles and started over, and he just hasn't been that way for years. We've seen him persist with these projects. We saw him persist with Almunia for too long. We saw him neglect the defense for too long. We've seen him ignore defensive midfield. I mean, he spent all those years trying to nurture Alex Song into the holding midfielder he needed. Then he sold him and didn't replace him. It just, I'm not totally sure I see the forest through the trees anymore, you know?
Well, I think there's more than enough reason to justify extending Giroud. I mean, I know what you're saying about it seeming to be so easy, but it's not like up until this injury, he's been our workhorse, and he's been fit up until this, and he's been a consistent performer, contributing some goals and plenty of assists. So I don't really have an issue with it. But let's move ahead to the daunting task at the weekend, which is only looking. I think part of the reason why everyone was so gloomy after this North London derby, because we didn't have the win to give us that momentum, and then we're going into what is undoubtedly, I'd say, our toughest fixture of the season so far, and that is going to Jose Mourinho's fucking Chelsea at the Bridge. with going to face our old boy Fabregas, who especially in the wake of injuries and whatnot, and people talking about where you'd fit him in, it certainly seems like there would have been a way to find a place for him here at Arsenal. I don't know. It seems like there's like a looming cloud with people kind of worried about what could potentially happen at the weekend. So let's go to you, Elliot. What are your thoughts about us facing Chelsea at the Bridge this weekend?
Can we forfeit?
Just leave it 3-0 and just right there, right?
Yeah, just take the 3-0. I mean, here's the problem, right? Like, if somehow Diego Costa isn't fit and can't play, then, you know, I'd say maybe there's something we could do there. But then again, they didn't have any strikers.
No. Then they have Drogba, who always beats us.
Well, yeah, they had no strikers last year, and they still managed to put 6 past us. I think that here's the question. Can Arsene Wenger swallow his pride and go park the bus at Stamford Bridge and try to let Alexis Sanchez and Danny Welbeck run after long balls when we can try to counter? If he has... If he can swallow his pride and play that way, then who knows? Maybe we get a 0-0, a 1-1. Maybe we even nick the game. But if we go there and do what we do, they're going to beat us heavily again. And you know what will happen? There'll be periods of the game where we feel like we're playing the better football, and they'll score, and there'll be people on Twitter saying, so typical, we're playing all the football, but they're ahead. When in fact, it'll just be them running the blueprint, you know, is an absolute utter cunt, and I hate him, and I hate his team.
And he's always,
but
he's
you can't argue with the fact. Yeah, well, you just can't argue with the fact that he's had Arsene's number. And if I'm Arsene Wenger, I say, all right, enough. I'm not going there to play my free flowing football. I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to be pragmatic. And if he is pragmatic, and if he does pick his best players in their best position, we have a good enough. You know what bothers me, guys? Here's the thing, right? We may be short defensive cover and we may have no defensive midfielder, but at the end of the day, the players we're putting on the pitch are very, very good players. We should not be getting humiliated, turned over, embarrassed. I mean, we should have enough discipline and enough tactics to be in every game. So I would love for them to prove that they can be pragmatic and get something at Stamford Bridge. And what if then I look at how we played at Dortmund, and I just don't know that we have it in us. And that's my worry, you know?
Yeah, it's very concerning. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those, like, the situation's so dire with the fitness and everything, but I've got that really weird feeling that somehow we're going to go in there and be able to pull off a result.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. No, I can't explain it, because really half of me is saying we're going to get turned over and this could be really humiliating, but I think we do have the ingredients to play well on the counterattack, and I don't know. We see a mixed bag, right? Half the time this team shows up in some of these big matches, and half the time we fucking lay an egg, especially when we have gone so willy-nilly and concede all those goals early in a match. You know, I think if we can make it to halftime without falling behind, there's a really good chance, you know, if we haven't, you know, conceded some stupid fucking goal in the first 20, 30 minutes. You know, we do have, you know, look, Jose can't really do what he did against City, right? He can't sit back and absorb pressure the entire time while at home. I mean, even he will be called the biggest pussy for doing it if he does that again in this kind of situation. He has the superior squad. He has the more talent. He's playing at home. He has to bring the game to us. And if Arsenal
he can still sit back and pick us off and score 6.
Fucking asshole.
It's what he did last time.
I mean, if we play the way we did versus Spurs, they score half of those chances that Spurs didn't even get that final pass to. You know, the talent on their team gets that pass there, and half of those things go in.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the problem too, right? This is where you look at it when it gets really tough. You know, who's going to be the guy pressing Fabregas in midfield that's going to prevent him from playing the ball in behind our back four? And you know, can Callum Chambers really stop Eden Hazard one-on-one? You know, I mean,
no.
You start to look at the matchups where they take place across the field, and if we leave those players on an island, they're going to get destroyed, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a very daunting task ahead, and it looms large. It doesn't look pretty at all. I mean, I think maybe it's just being too much of an optimist. I think there's a chance there, and just with what we have on the flanks, that, you know, we would be able to. I mean, really, it's gonna we're gonna have to get all the breaks and all the bounces, and we don't exactly get the rub of the green at the fucking bridge, except for the last time that we won when John Terry slipped on the fucking green, and that was, you know, that was a great moment.
We don't even get the bounce. I mean, I've watched so many goals created for other teams where the bounce just happens to fall right. That bounce never falls for us. It never just happens to ricochet off a guy and fall at our feet. Except, you know, once in a blue moon. But I see it like every weekend.
What are you talking about? Danny Welbeck's air kick and then
well, that, like, that's why I was saying that. And just as I was saying it, I remember we had one. So I was going to shut up, but I was already all the way in.
You were already committed, but I had
you were already there.
Out.
Yeah, you.
But you didn't have to like throw me under the bus already. I mean, you know, it's pretty wicked.
No, he did. He just went there.
Yeah,
it was.
That's why people don't get invites and shit.
I think like, you know what, guys? Like to me, I think the thing that's frustrating is like we've spent a lot of money. It's the days of being able to just say, well, they have Abramovich or they have Sheikh Mansour, and that's why we're behind them. I mean, they still do have those guys, but like, I think those days are over. I don't think you can say the reason we're where we are is because we can't spend like they spend. I think
you can still say a little bit. They're able to hold that depth throughout the squad.
Oh, well, okay.
Right, but
you know what?
Can
I make a quick
one
point?
One person in each position.
look at the money that United have spent, and everybody's making fun of Van Gaal and United for not addressing their real needs. You know, ha ha ha, look what they've done. We've done the exact same thing, just at a different price point. You know, they went out
and we have a couple better defenders originally, you know, before the action, so it makes it look a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But I guess the moral of the story is we failed to do what we needed in those areas of the pitch just like they did. You know, and everyone's making fun of them for lack of balance, but I would argue that we've gone about building our team the same way they did. Just, you know, we didn't spend £250 million or whatever the hell it was, you know, on the attacking side. I think the thing that's
160, something like that.
You know, whatever it is. I mean, some ridiculous amount of money. It's so, you know, and everyone can sit there and say it's so obvious that they should have spent some of it at the other end of the pitch. But I think the same can obviously be said for us. I think the reason I'm frustrated too is because even with our deficiencies, there should be tactics we can employ that makes use of the personnel we have where we can compete. I mean, we aren't short of quality. So something just isn't right, you know, and to me, ultimately, it is the manager. And the reason it's the manager is, you know, not to make this, you know, American-centric, but, you know, this whole thing in the NFL going on where Roger Goodell has been under a lot of pressure. He's the commissioner of the National Football League, and there's been a lot of headaches with off-the-field issues that he's been dealing with. At some point when you're the boss, the buck stops with you, and you have to fix the problems in your company, your league, your team, whatever it is. Arsene Wenger is the man who ultimately, I think everybody agrees, wields all the power at Arsenal. And if he wields all the power at Arsenal and he's developing the tactics and he's identifying the targets and he's choosing the players to buy, and we're seeing some of the same mistakes repeated and some of the same season after season issues remaining unaddressed, at some point, there has to be culpability for that.
Well, good luck on the new manager in 2 seasons' time, because nothing's going to change before then.
Nothing. Well, yeah. Okay.
You know? There's just no point to go into any further. I mean, I'm with you there. It is tough. And like you said, having absolute rule over the situation and having, you know, divine right for every decision that's made within the club is probably too much power. And is, you know, generally, you know, we don't have the checks and balances in place the way they should be. And he's, you know, he's earned some of that over time, but really it's not doing us any favors anymore. So it's tough. It is really tough, but these are longstanding issues, things that are not going to get resolved overnight. So give me a quick, before we leave, please give me a score prediction. We're not going to go goal scorers today. I don't want, you have to name what Chelsea players are going to do the damage. give me a score line, Joseph. For Chelsea.
Chelsea.
4-1 loss.
Wow.
And it's going to go like this. They're going to score because, you know, that's what we do. And we'll tie it up. And then they'll get 3 more goals.
All right. Well, that would raise the spirits. We'll move on to you, Elliot.
I'll say 3-1 loss.
3-1 loss.
Unless Costa doesn't play, and then I'd give us a shot to maybe squeak something out.
I'm going to go 1-1 draw at the bridge.
Bite your hand off for it.
I would kick a puppy for that.
Yeah, do backflips into the interlow.
And by the way, look, I do think the short preseason, and I do think the World Cup and all that has impacted us, and I do think the team will gel, and I do think it will improve substantially. The thing that's frustrating right now is even if we gel beyond our wildest dreams in attack, at least until January, there's nothing we can do to protect ourselves at the back. So it would just be really frustrating if we did finally gel and look like a really spectacular team going forward, but leave ourselves without the solution at the back to be a complete team. Because with the money we're spending and the talent we're assembling, we're one or two pieces away from challenging for everything. But because we don't have those pieces, I don't know that we can challenge for anything. If you see what I'm saying.
We're not challenging for anything.
Yeah, it's a precarious situation, and it's not ideal. We're short a couple bodies, and I'm with you. It's less than ideal, and we could be coming up short in a season that really promised so much in terms of what we had potentially if the squad had been filled.
Second year in a row where we had a lot of potential in the summer, and we didn't get what we needed again.
Look, preseason, I think it may have been. Been on this podcast, I said, I think we'll buy a DM and I think we'll win the title. And then, you know, I made the point that if we don't buy a DM, I don't think we'll win the title. But, you know, it's amazing what, you know, and that's the thing, right? Like, I think this is why there is a lot of frustration among a lot of supporters, is simply because there is the realization that it's so close. It feels like it's so close. But for some reason, one critical piece is missing, or the way we're deploying the players doesn't work.
We've been waiting so long for it too, you know, and we finally got back to, you just get back to the precipice. We're in the title race last season. You think you're going to kick on and really, really give it a go this season. You know, it wasn't that far-fetched. You know, before the season, if we signed a striker and if we got the defender and this and that, you'd think that we'd actually have a squad that could compete for the real honors this season. And it feels like it's slipping away. It really feels like it's slipping away. And the worst part about it is that it feels like it was preventable. So, way to end on a high note, right? Because everything's so fucking rosy.
Yeah, I'm going to go bang my head into a wall.
Yeah, I'm going to go take a long walk off a short pier.
I'll tell you this much. I think if we were playing scintillating attacking football but gifting teams goals, even then I think there'd be a little more optimism. I think what everybody is finding really difficult to accept is how blunt we've looked in attack.
Yeah.
Because, that's hard to explain given the talent we have.
Well, gentlemen, I think we have to leave it there. Yep. It's been a pleasure as always, even if the topics have not been as so light and feathery. But it was a good time as always, and you know, to some good results. I think across the board, we'd all say we think we're going to handle business against Galatasaray on Wednesday, right? Yes.
Yep.
All right. So that's a good thing. We're all predicting wins there. Maybe not so much for the weekend, but we'll see what happens. You know, hopefully we can take some good form from midweek once we get it straight against the Turks. And take it to the bridge, because it'd be wonderful to actually have something exciting to say after facing Mourinho at the bridge. I'm not gonna hold my breath, but we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining, gentlemen. You can follow these fine fellows on Twitter. Follow Joseph at I Hate Your Club and follow Elliot at Yankee Gunner. And we'll have to do this again soon. And thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.